All right, good evening, everyone. This is Rochelle Wilhite, the designated broker for Best Choice Realty. Tonight we are going to be discussing the best things to consider when presenting or representing a seller. We're going to talk about how to look at some offers and how we would utilize a Form 47 in certain situations. So hopefully you have your notebook handy and you can take down a few ideas from today's class. We are going to start with the actual, I received an offer or I'm receiving multiple offers. We're going to talk about how to best properly communicate with your sellers. So tip number one tonight would be to make sure you set expectations with the seller on what type of strategy you will be using when communicating with them about offers that are coming in. Most of the time we've talked about it in prior calls, you're already doing a good job of communicating with them on a weekly basis as you prepare for the listing. But once you start to get showings and you know you're expecting offers to come in, you also need to set expectations of what the seller needs to expect. So if your seller's in a multiple offer situation, maybe have gone out of town for the weekend, and that you'll be reviewing offers on, say, a Tuesday or Wednesday, you may need to talk with them when they return from their little weekend getaway to talk with them about what to expect on the offer presentation day. Sometimes it would be best for them to be very flexible, meaning that, you know, you'll probably meet with them late in the evening on that day of preparation, of offer presentation and preparation. Sometimes they'll need to be together by a computer so they can sign something. Other clients or other sellers are going to want you to come to their property or to their house or meet in an office situation to present the offers. You do need to understand and share with them what to expect and how you work, but also understand how they like to best receive information. So before I even venture down the path of multiple offers, I've had that conversation with my sellers about when we do get offers, what will be a typical way that I present them to you. And it's going to be dependent on their tech skills, their availability, and their personal situations of where they're going to be when that day occurs. Sometimes I may not know, but I'll do the best I can to plan for the most used offer presentation with that particular client. For example, one of the clients I worked with recently was a teacher. It was my elementary school teacher, and she and her husband worked at Boeing, and her husband was retiring from Boeing. So they both went out of town for the weekend. We knew we were going to review offers on Tuesday, and so I had made arrangements to have them both be available so that we could meet in person, or we could do. And when I asked them about electronic signature, they got a little uneasy about that. And so they scrapped that idea, and we just decided that once we get offers, when they get back from town, we would talk about them on the phone, but that we'd actually sit down and go over the offers in person and actually print them out and have them ready to go. So I need to make sure that when I did the offer expiration, you know, the offer presentation on the multiple listing service, when I indicated that, when I've got all these offers coming in over the weekend, I said that, you know, the seller may go with something ahead of time, but they do have an offer review date of Tuesday. And then I made sure that all of the people who expressed interest knew that my offer, the offers need to be submitted by 5 p.m. So I had time to print them out in my office and then get over to a seller meeting at 7 o'clock. So we had a good timeline. I was able to work well with those other cooperating brokers that wrote offers and meet my seller's expectations. So we had a good plan before they headed out of town. Now, a bad way to go about that would be if I had no conversation with the sellers. They went out of town over the weekend. They got multiple offers, lots of interest over the weekend. And then they felt rushed into making a decision. It could have been really bad when they got back because I didn't have a plan in place. I maybe sent them something electronic. They couldn't open it up. They had problems with AuthentiSign. That could be a bad way to go about the offer presentation process. So when you're working with a seller, make sure, tip number one, to have a proper communication before they head out of town so they know how you will best present the offers to them when they show up. Now, what could happen is maybe we receive nothing. That is happening on some of our listings where we had an offer review date and the offer review date came and went with no offers being submitted. That is starting to happen in certain areas. So keep that in mind as well and set the seller up for that possibility. When that occurs, let's say in my circumstance in Auburn, that occurred where we didn't receive any offers, what I would simply do is remove the offer review date and then come up with a new strategy on how we would best communicate offers as they came in. And in my circumstance where the sellers were okay with technology, but much better when I came and explained the offer, it would have been a very smooth process when I presented the offers. So consider that point. The next thing to do when you're presenting offers is to, if you're in a multiple offer situation where you're receiving multiple offers, you do have to be very good at communicating with that cooperating broker. Sometimes I've been able to negotiate much better prices than I would have even dreamed of just by having good conversations. So the way I would recommend you doing it is, you know, you have a lot of offers coming in. Let the buyer's agents know when you will be presenting them to the seller. Make sure that you have, I mean, again, if somebody called me and said, hey, Rochelle, when are you going to be presenting offers? I told them I'd like to have all the offers to me by 5 p.m., but if you'd like to submit ahead of time, go ahead and do so. The buyer's agents run the risk that I will run the price up or negotiate against their price. So, you know, you can do that, but sometimes it's not in your best interest as a buyer's agent to submit your offer early unless you have some indication that you know the listing agent is going to be able to get your offer accepted. I flat out told the agents as a listing agent, unless it's cash, we are going to wait for the deadline of Tuesday. So all of the buyer's agents that were financed waited until the last day to submit their offers. Once I received the offers, and I received the offers on Monday because they thought the sellers would be back from their out-of-town venture and that we could present them when they return from being out of town, on Monday when I received three offers, what I decided to do is let all of the parties know that I received multiple offers. I have a really good email you can send those agents. If you'd like to get that, just send me an email, and I'll forward you the email I used in that circumstance. And then they are aware and they have the opportunity to redraft their offer or modify it with a Form 36 or 34 in any aspect to clean up or make their offer better or more appealing to the seller. It's a nice email that I've created that would be appropriate to send in that type of circumstance. So it is an email that just says, hey, I've been in receipt of your offer. We are in receipt of multiple offers, and we are going to review all offers with the seller on this date and this time. If you'd like to redraft or modify anything on your offer, please submit, and here's how you do it. So that's a very, very succinct, good email that you could send out to these cooperating brokers that are writing offers for their buyers. The requirement you have as a listing agent is to not only receipt the offers that you get, but also to ensure, make sure that you've presented the offers to your seller. Presentation means that you have presented, meaning that they have received and you've presented, meaning you've explained the offers to them, the strengths and the weaknesses of each offer. When you look at the contract, making sure that the seller is aware that this one has a 5-day inspection contingency. This one has no inspection contingency. This offer has a finance contingency of 30 days. This one has a limited appraisal contingency or a finance contingency with a limited or crossed out appraisal contingency. It is your duty to make sure you've presented the offers. You can do presentation by email. There's nothing wrong with doing that. A presented offer could be as simply as taking the email that the buyer's agent sent you with the offer and forwarding it to the seller and then having a phone conversation. That would, in essence, be presentation. You have proof that you presented based on your phone records and also an email that you forwarded from the buyer's agent to the seller. You really should keep good record of that because there are complaints that are starting to be formed, hopefully not on our agents because we've been properly trained, but on other companies where our buyer's agents have become very frustrated. For my knowledge, I've submitted 2 complaints already against other brokers because they improperly did not present our offers. And when our offer is really good, a cash buyer, and our offer is not, I have proof that our offer was not presented to the seller, that's not going to be a very good thing for that listing agent or that listing firm. The state regulates, the state investigates, and this, as far as I know, the 2 occurrences that I am aware of, those are in current investigation right now. Now, I don't know if anything will come of it. The buyer certainly didn't, they won, you know, lost out on the house, did not win, but it doesn't look good out in the real estate community for you not to be presenting all offers. That is your duty as a listing agent, to present all offers, even if they're lowballs, even if they're maybe they're not as favorable to the seller. Any offer must be presented, and you really should have proof that you have presented it to the seller. So those are some things to keep in mind. When you are in, you know, you've presented the offer, the way I like to work once I've selected an offer with the seller is to let all the buyer's agents know in a very professional way that they were, that the sellers did not choose their offer. And I have a very good email for that as well that I can send you. So if you'd like to send me an email, I'll be happy to send you the 2 emails that I use all the time. One that says I'm in receipt of multiple offers, and the other one is to notify the parties who did not win, who wrote up an offer and the seller did not choose them because of, and I don't go into a lot of detail, but it is very, it's a very professional email, and it definitely puts an end to the whining, is what I would say, the whining. Why didn't you pick mine? We wrote, did you really present it? It pretty much quashes all of that in this email. So it might help you if you're struggling with how to best communicate with your sellers and your buyers in the real estate community to have these 2 emails. So once I'm presenting to the seller, and let's say I'm presenting in person, which I highly recommend with my elementary school teacher that I had growing up, you know, I wanted to make sure that, you know, they are not technology or savvy on the computer as much as I was, or the buyer's agent was. So I wanted to make sure that everybody had a fair shot and that they felt like they understood what offer would be best suited for them. I printed all pages. I know it eats your ink. I get it. But it's important when you're presenting in person to print everything out, even if you don't think they're going to go with one offer or another. It's improper if you do not print the entire offer out. Some agents at some competing companies that we do a lot of business with, no, I'm not going to name any names, they have been stung quite recently because they only presented the first page of all of the competing offers. That is not the proper way to present the offers. So if you're sitting down with an elderly couple and you're going through 10 offers, you really should print the entire offer out, paperclip each one. You could put in a spreadsheet together so you can keep track of it. I've put a little post-it note many times just so I remember which one is which one. You know, when you have 7, 8, 9, 10 offers to present, it becomes challenging to keep straight. But if you have everything paper-clipped and everything printed when you present them in person to the seller and they are actually the ones making a decision, that's the proper way to do it. Post-it note each one of them so that you have some talking points for each offer. Most of the time, the sellers will ask you for your professional opinion, which one would you choose? Be careful not to persuade them from one over another. Make it very factual and very specific to their needs. You know, obviously, things to keep in mind on an offer would be some of the following. So if you're detailing on a post-it note, financing, you know, if financing being used, is there a pre-approval letter and contact information from the loan officer? If the financing contingency is waived, maybe you should consider using a 22EF and countering so you have proof of funds or disclosure of the source of the funds. If it's a cash purchase, there have been some agents who have chosen, oh, I thought this was a cash buyer, this was solid, and they find out that the cash was not seasoned or not here in the U.S., and they were unable to get the funds, and so they're unable to make that deal, you know, even sue the buyer, because the buyer's funds, all of their funds, all of the cash they were using was overseas, and even the earnest money was not even liquid. So be very cautious at making sure that you have proof of funds, or that you, if you're going to accept something, that you counter back with a 22EF and ask for the disclosure of the funds or proof that the funds are in the escrow company's account prior to closing. Those would be good things to ask for if you were countering, or if you were educating buyer's agents as they're redrafting their offers to make those adjustments in their offers. Most agents have been trained to use a 22A or not to use a 22A, but that still doesn't allow the seller any recourse in the contract for suit or legal because of not using a 22EF. So you may want to use that more regularly than you have in the past. Or if you're unsure, certainly give me a call in a specific situation. I'll educate you on what you need to be aware of. With title, there, title contingency, if you've done a good job and you have ordered preliminary title, upload the preliminary title as a supplementary document. By doing so, it eliminates the buyer's agents from including a 22T, which is a title contingency. A title contingency is not in the seller's best interest, especially if they've opened up preliminary title and it's fully disclosed to the buyer's agents. They're providing clean title, and here is a copy of the preliminary title report for their review. There really shouldn't be a need for a 22T unless there is a way or an issue that the buyer is wanting to back out. It is a way for the buyer to back out easily using a 22T title contingency. So keep that in mind when you're looking at the offers. A 22T is, as long as you've ordered preliminary title commitment, there really is no reason the title contingency is needed unless there's something on title that they're concerned about. Escrow, I always like to direct escrow as much as possible. However, you know, really escrow is a shared cost. And so if I open up prelim title with a particular title company, and escrow is, I also have a good closer there at escrow, it would have to be a very rare occurrence where possibly, you know, my closer did not speak a foreign language and the buyers were a foreign citizen and they would want to have that type of support when closing a transaction. Those are the times, those exceptions that you may make an exception on escrow. But for the most part, title and escrow will save your seller money, approximately 10%, by combining title and escrow together, meaning the title company is the same company for escrow. However, for purposes, like I know we use JK Law Group for many of our Korean buyers because it's a Korean law group and a Korean escrow company that will handle the closing of many of our buyers or sellers that speak a different language. That is a rare occurrence where you could fight for that in your offer and to ask for the sellers to allow you to use that. And the reason being is it will help your buyer move smoother through the process, or your seller move smoother through the process. On item number 14, when you're representing the seller, this goes for many times when I see this a lot, where there's confusion and what do we do with item number 14 on the purchase and sale agreement, where it says seller is or is not a foreign person for purposes of U.S. income taxation. When you go ahead and accept the offer and you're working as a listing agent, go ahead and check the appropriate box or indicate on the agent-only remarks so that the buyer's agent can fill that part in. Or the other solution would be to have a 22E on file with as a supplementary document so they can use that as addenda. Whatever the reason may be, it just needs to be stated on the purchase and sale agreement, either on the 22E, item 14, or in the agent remarks, so that people can properly fill out the documents. Most of the time, people will not know what to do, and every listing agent has been trained differently. So keep that in mind, that item number 14 is not a counteroffer per the contract. It is a disclosure purpose that needs to be handled before closing. So it is not a counteroffer. The other things that really you'll want to consider to make your offer stand out, or what I would say to buyer's agents that are really interested in making an offer, is I tell the buyer's agents to help strengthen their offer. The seller prefers a quick close. All the time, most sellers prefer a quick close. Now, they may need a rent back, or they may need to have time to move out. That can be negotiated, but a good buyer's agent will take that little piece of information and be able to adjust their offer accordingly. Escalation clauses, you need to make it very clear with those buyer's agents. Are they welcomed, or are you wanting highest and best? Be very, very calm and collected when you talk about escalation clauses. There have been times where my sellers like them and times where my sellers don't like them. And so if my sellers are okay with escalation clauses, I'll let the buyer's agents know. Go ahead and use the 35E, the escalation addendum. I'm very familiar with how to use them, and so is my firm. I always include my designated broker when we have escalation clauses so that I properly know how to communicate the best offer for my seller. So you either use them, they're welcomed, or they're not. Make sure that you clearly explain that to each buyer's agent. You may also want to find out from the buyer's agents their level. If you're dealing with only finance buyers, no cash offers, you may want to have a discussion with the buyer's agent if they call and want to know how to strengthen their offer, if they've ever used a 22AD. Most buyer's agents are not familiar or well-trained in that form, but it could make the difference of you selecting their offer over another finance buyer. Because the buyer has, in the 22AD, agreed to increase their down payment if an appraisal comes in lower than the asking price. That would be a good thing for your seller if you knew that the buyer was willing to cover the difference if the appraised value did not come in at the price, if you're considering all finance buyers. The other thing that's really popular right now in King County especially is releasing a portion of the earnest money or releasing all of the earnest money to the seller as a non-refundable advance towards the purchase price upon mutual acceptance. Now, I just stated kind of what, in essence, it is. I'm seeing all kinds of creativity with that, and it makes me very nervous out there. So if you are wanting to counter back earnest money releases or things of that nature, and you're writing it on a 22D, stop right there. Do not do that. Make sure you get the appropriate language from me to include with a counteroffer or to make it very clear what is taking place. I've even seen earnest money has been being released as a deposit to the seller, not to the buyer. And then a lot of confusion, a lot of back and forth with their designated broker to fix what was a simple mistake on the buyer's agent's part or a simple misunderstanding on the listing agent's part. So let's be very clear, whenever you're modifying the purchase and sale agreement by utilizing language about an earnest money being non-refundable, please come to me or send me a text message so I can give you the appropriate language to use for that. There is not a way to make the earnest money non-refundable unless you're waiving all contingencies, including finance, inspection, resale certificates for condos, that type of thing. So we need to be very, very clear about what is happening with that type of clause. I think it's a smart clause and very appealing to a seller, but again, we don't want to mix the creativity with something that's really a benefit. It creates more mess than it needs to be. The other thing I see a lot of that will help your offer stand out is either signing off on the Form 17, last page 1 and 2, which means they're waiving their right to revoke the offer for a material defect on a Form 17. I've also seen removing lines 201 through 204, paragraph W on the Form 21 or 28. Those types of removing must, if they are being removed or they're asking for that clause to be removed, that's fine, but must require an initial on that section. Or the same thing could take place by just having on the Form 17, if you have, you know, given that to the buyer's agent and the buyer's agent has submitted the Form 17 separate from the purchase and sale agreement would be the best practice, but also to have them sign off on 1 and 2, they do not have the right to back out on the Form 17 for a material defect. So that would be a benefit to the seller if they removed that section of the purchase and sale agreement or they waived their right to revoke on the Form 17. You could do both as a redundancy, but in essence, both work or waive that section. To conclude our conference call tonight, I'll briefly discuss the last form that you really should print out, Form 47. Oh, before I jump there, let me just make one more comment about counteroffers. I love to see counteroffers that are done on a Form 36. I think more of the agents that have done thousands and thousands of transactions like I have will tend to strike out less of the purchase and sale agreement and end up using a Form 36. When you do that, when you counteroffer, you use the Form 36 on the first page of the purchase and sale agreement, right above the seller's signature line, you can type this pursuant to Form 36. That does not require an initial. You can just write pursuant to Form 36, have the seller sign all of the pages of the purchase and sale agreement, and then include a Form 36 as the first page when you submit the counteroffer. It becomes very clear what you're modifying. It becomes very clear when mutual acceptance has occurred and when it occurred and the date and the time when that occurred. And it creates a lot less confusion than the alternative, which a lot of the older agents or agents that maybe haven't done a lot of deals and they're kind of it's a little bit sloppier. I'm just going to call it what it is. It's a little bit sloppier to cross off and initial certain pages. I know it's legal, but I'd like to have you guys practice in using the Form 36 when you're countering more than crossing things off and lining things out. It becomes a lot harder to see when mutual acceptance occurred. So use the Form 36 as much as possible. When I go out and present to a seller and we have multiple offers, I will take a couple Form 36s with me in my bag so that I can, you know, I either type or I end up handwriting the counteroffer on the Form 36. And I have two or three pages just in case I mess up and I need to rewrite it. And I also print out when I go out on an appointment to present to a seller, I also print out a 36A, a withdrawal of offer or counteroffer. I have the seller sign that. I fill out the top portion of that form, and I have that ready to go just in case I need to withdraw. And I also have them sign a 22, if it's financed, I also have them sign a request, a 22AL, I believe. It's in the notices so that I have that on file so that I can send over or deliver that notice to the buyer's agent if they're financed buyers. We are entitled to get updates about the transaction during the financing contingency. Many listing agents do not act in the best interest of their sellers and let the timelines pass. Go ahead and have the seller, when you're meeting with them, sign, you know, just so you have in their file a 36A, and if you've got a finance buyer you're working with, the finance contingency removal, the 22AR and the 22AL, there's some different notices that you could have them sign. And then also, if I have multiple offers, I will always select a backup offer and have the seller either counter the backup offer, but put them in backup after I have, so I'll have that backup agreement. 38A, I believe, is a backup agreement to go ahead and have the seller put the second in place offer into position. That may not come to fruition, meaning that the buyer may be so upset they didn't get it or was not accepted, you know, for the first, they may refuse to sign the backup agreement, but there's been many times that I have done that, and I'm so glad I did, because sometimes the backup agreement comes into play as soon as the other one backs out or falls apart after they don't deliver the earnest money or do not or fail on inspection. So definitely consider those things as you're preparing for your presentation of the offers with your seller. Form 47 is a pretty straightforward form. Think of it as a form in lieu of a listing agreement or a 1A. where you or the seller may have identified the buyer, and you need to represent the seller in a purchase and sale agreement. So what this form does, it works really well with a for sale by owner or maybe a friend of the family who's looking to sell. I see about two or three of these in our office a month. So that's about the, you know, it's sometimes we use it, so I won't spend a lot of time on this form. If you'd like to need to discuss more in detail or a special situation so you don't get yourself in trouble, come to me and I'll help you with this form. But it allows for you to write up and get paid a commission or compensation for representing the seller on a property that is not on the MLS, or that it, maybe they found the buyer or maybe you found the buyer, and you have to indicate that on this Form 47 to make it legitimate. So you would need to put in the seller's name, the firm name. You would need to attach a legal description or fill out the section above. And then you'll need to indicate, and if not filled in, it's 30 days. Put your name on it, on number two. And number three, a lot of people ask me, Rochelle, what do you charge on compensation here? Well, if I'm not going to have to do marketing and it's to a buyer and I'm not representing the buyer, but you know you're going to be asked a lot of questions, you're probably going to have to go meet the buyer's inspector at the house. So there's a lot of time and work on your part to represent the seller in this type of fashion. Even though you don't have to pay for a photographer and you're having to pay for marketing expenses, you still have to represent the seller. But the buyer most likely in these circumstances are unrepresented, or you know, they don't, you're not paying a buyer's agent to represent the seller in this type of way. So my compensation that I usually go for on number three is around 2%, if you looked at my averages for these types of agreements, just because I knock off a point for not having to do marketing, but I do have to do a lot of work to keep the deal together and to negotiate the details with the buyer. So 2% I think is very fair. However, I have put in a compensation, and I've regretted it, of a flat fee where there was a seller that was selling to a renter. I represented the seller and the buyer in that section. It was a long process. It took 6 or 9 months to complete because there were septic issues and there was a lot of negotiations and things that had to take place in order for the deal to close. So when I look back at that Form 47 that I did back a couple years ago, I regret my decision to only charge the seller a flat fee. I should have done a percentage. So go ahead and fill out a percentage for the most time, but if you need to do a flat fee, it's still a flat fee for us at Best Choice. So consider that as you're filling in this Form 47. This means that you're not going to have to market the property, and the seller may not receive fair market value. The seller understands that by using a Form 47. They still have to provide a Form 17. They still have to comply with RCW codes. And it talks about attorney's fees. And it basically prevents any recourse from happening because the MLS, you know, is like, what is this person doing? This is a documented sale. It is something you would have to authorize the MLS to document. And this is intended, you know, to be a sale that's off market or not off market, but sale to an identified buyer. So there isn't marketing that's needed through the MLS or other sources in this type of a purchase and sale. There's more instructions on how to use the form by going to the manual. You can click on the manual on Express Forms and you can see all of the ins and outs of this form. But if you are representing a buyer as well as a seller, there's also things to keep in mind. I'm not going to go into that, but Form 47 basically says that you have given them the law of agency pamphlet and that you are representing them, and for that representation, you're getting a compensation for that. So come to me if you have a question about the Form 47. We have a buyer broker offer guide and notes that I could send you and emails that I use quite regularly. So if you'd like that information, just send me a quick email. Have a great week. The kids are back in school, and we have another surge that's taking place all across our areas of opportunity where we have Tacoma, Seattle, and I just got a phone call from today. There's multiple offers in Everett. So there's still a lot of opportunity out there and a lot of buyers still on the hunt for houses. So good luck and have a great week. We'll talk to you guys soon.